Hey, fellow Boat Geeks, it's Darren here, and I wanted to let you all know that right now we have a giveaway going for three separate pairs of tickets to the Boats Afloat show on Lake Union this April 25th to the 28th. Each winner will also receive a pair of tickets to the VIP night private preview party on Wednesday, April 24th. To enter the giveaway, head to our YouTube, Facebook, or Instagram pages at The Boat Geeks for more information. Good luck, and we hope to see you at the show.
This episode of The Boat Geeks is sponsored by The Boater's Guide, a free app for Pacific Northwest boaters. The Boater's Guide is adventure and information right at your fingertips, right when you need it. Find your happy place with The Boater's Guide, a free download on your phone or tablet in the App Store and Google Play.
On this episode of The Boat Geeks, we have George Harris, President and CEO of the Northwest Marine Trade Association, or the NMTA, also known as, and he'll love this, the King of Boats.
Yeah, the nickname his daughter gave him.
Yes,
which
absolutely.
Is so cute.
We love it. And he did have a love for boats. He has an extensive history with boating and boats. Definitely fit right in on The Boat Geeks podcast. Yeah.
Super interesting guy, too. I mean, he's really smart. He's real sharp.
Yeah.
He has a love for what he does. And we all, as Pacific Northwest boaters, we benefit from the work that George does and the NMTA, both in Olympia.
Mm-hmm.
And the highest profile thing they do is the Seattle Boat Show every year, which is something we love.
Brings lots of business to the Pacific Northwest and to Washington. And that's really what the NMTA is all about, is supporting the local marine trade businesses and so forth. And which is, you know, a lot of the business up here, you know. So it's really an important service that they provide. It was great getting all that information from him and getting to hear more about the NMTA. So here we go on the Boat Geeks. It is Mr. George Harris.
From beautiful Port Townsend, Washington, a Victorian seaport on the Salish Sea, and recorded aboard the Motor Vessel Traveler, it's The Boat Geeks with Darren and Darren.
I'm daydreaming of a day.
Welcome to the next episode of The Boat Geeks. I am your host, Darren.
And I'm your other host, Darren.
And we are joined today by a very special guest, George Harris, President and CEO of the NMTA, Northwest Maritime Trade Association.
Northwest Marine Trade Association.
Marine Trade Association. Marine. George, NMTA, tell us about that.
Great to be here. Thanks, you guys.
Yeah.
I think, do you have to be a boat geek to be on the show?
Yes, and you are a boat geek, are you, not?
You are.
I think I qualify as a boat geek.
We heard the title King of Boats, so I think that applies.
I'm not sure where you got that, but that comes from my daughters.
That's where we got
that's
it.
My
it's
daughters.
On your bio. One of your daughters
that's
calls
a good
you
sign.
The King of Boats.
King of Boats, so. K-O-B. So Northwest Marine Trade Association, awesome organization, was formed in 1947.
Wow.
We have an office in Seattle, in Mariner's Square, right above Fisheries Supply.
Oh, great.
Great spot.
Yeah.
We've had a lease there for over 40 years.
Nice.
Look over.
Great view.
Gasworks Park, Lake Union. And believe it or not, there's 8 people full-time that go to work every day.
Wow.
Thinking, how can we make the world better for boating here in the Northwest?
We love it. We love it.
We do. You know, I've heard NMTA a lot.
Yep.
You've discussed it previously. And so I love being able to dive further into what organizations like you do for boaters up here in the Pacific Northwest. But before we get into that, business side of things, as you mentioned, we are boat geeks and we love to talk about boats and you being the king of boats. what is your background, your history, your passion for boats? Where did that develop in your life?
Boating is my briar patch, as my parents say. Whatever you do, don't make George, you know, talk about boats or think about boats. It's my briar patch. And I think I just sort of came into the world thinking about boating. And funny little story is my dad, when I was like 3, he was super excited. He got a pool table and it had this beautiful blue green felt, mostly blue felt. Mm. And somehow or another, I would climb up there and I loved to slide my toy boats around on the blue felt of his pool table. Dad didn't think that was the best way to use his pool table. And he said I drooled a lot on the pool table. So, you know, it started at early age. And then, you know, like a lot of us that get into boating, we learn it from our family. Mm-hmm. You know, my parents, my grandparents, and had nearby water. And, you know, way back long ago, we were in South Dakota boating on the Owyhee Reservoir.
Oh, wow.
And then we went back to Michigan, where we're from. And then ultimately in 1972, ended up in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, at the southern end, right where the top of Green Bay sort of joins Lake Michigan. And we had a house adjacent to the big marina in the area. And I was kind of a marina rat. And a buddy of mine and his brother had an El Toro sailboat. And so that's kind of what I cut my teeth on.
Nice.
And just boating as a young person, I mean, you can't drive a car.
It's, yeah.
Until you're 16, but man, you can.
It's freedom, you know, before a
at
car.
8 years old, man.
Yeah.
You just go out in that El Toro, and and then we somehow or another we got our hands on a little spinnaker. Yeah. And can you picture a little El Toro with a spinnaker?
What a sight! Screaming along the lake.
Yeah, yeah. And then my dad was really big into fishing, fishing, just obsessed with it. And maybe when you're a kid, you got to rebel against your parents or something like that. So if dad was into fishing, I needed to do something different. And there was a dive shop in town, scuba diving shop. And that gear just sparkled for me, all that scuba diving gear in the late 70s, early 80s, when scuba diving was kind of really coming on. And so I'd roll down to the dive shop on my skateboard and made friends with the owner. And I don't know, age 14. He had me working there part-time in the summers, filling tanks and cleaning the boat and rinsing the wetsuits, whatever it took.
Yeah.
And then I worked for Bob all the way until I finished college during the summers. So
wow.
It was kind of like Boy Scouts for me. If you've done any diving, whether it's PADI or SSI, you kind of move up from open water to advanced to rescue to dive. And anyway, I got my instructor rating my freshman year of college. And so for about 15 years, it was dive, ran the charter boat, was teaching all over the state. We had, at Michigan State University, we went to school, 42,000 students, and they did not have a scuba diving program there for credit.
Wow.
So I met another guy on campus, and so we started a scuba diving club, and wow, there were a lot of people there that wanted to learn to scuba dive.
I bet.
I was basically running a dive shop out of my dorm room and a travel agency. And it probably harmed my GPA, but really, you know, great opportunity for leadership, working with a lot of people from with differing points of view. And I kind of think that's what I'm doing today. You know, running a trade association is, you know, leadership, and you know, requires a lot of different skill sets, all that stuff that I learned in diving and whatnot. And then moved out here to the Pacific Northwest in 91, and within a year bought a sailboat, bought a Crown 34.
Oh yeah,
my beloved Crown 34. Oh, yeah. Last Crown ever made.
Wow.
And I turned it into a piece of art. I like to say that's when you make a $100,000 boat that you can sell for $40,000.
Yeah.
But my wife and I sailed and cruised that for 16 years. It was a tough day to sell it. But what happened about, I don't know, 15 years into it is I fell in love with fishing again. So all of that imprint that I had as a young person and the great salmon fishing that we have here in Puget Sound, I was all in. And so that's where I've been the last few years is fishing. And ran a C-Sport 24 for about 12 years. And then I just downsized 2 years ago to a center console and on a trailer so I can go to where the fish are.
Yes,
oh, there you go. So when you came out here in 91, had you been diving out here?
That's what I was going to ask too.
Had not. I was actually working. I was actually living in Florida, working for a company that manufactured scuba diving equipment. I was doing sales and product development for them. And it was interesting. The owner of the company said, George, the Pacific Northwest, most beautiful place in the world. You got to go there. And simultaneously, my dad had always longed to maybe live in Oregon or Washington or something like that. So when I got a call from Connolly Waterskis back in 91 to come work for them and help them get into the scuba diving business, I said, sure, I'm on my way.
Wow.
Didn't Jacques Cousteau rank the San Juan Islands as one of the top three dive spots in the world?
Yeah, world renowned diving up here.
So when you first went, up here, you must have been like, oh my gosh.
So, you know, I grew up, or we were doing deep wreck diving in the Great Lakes and Lake Superior, Lake Michigan, Lake Huron.
How deep?
You know, most of the stuff was recreational levels, you know, 60 to 120 feet.
And there's a lot of wrecks.
Oh,
yeah.
Just so many wrecks. And then there's just this whole culture of finding them and the history of them and respecting them. And then up in Lake Superior, up in Whitefish Bay, Edmund Fitzgerald, or I didn't ever dive the Fitzgerald. That's like 500. But I knew people that were doing it.
Yeah.
And I was kind of maybe just leaving diving when mixed gas was coming on. But up in Isle Royale, you know, 180 feet on air, the stern of the Emperor, that sort of thing. And, you know, on air, you know, you get 10 minutes of bottom time, if that. But, you know, you go down there, take a picture or two, and then move on. And you know, the water's clear, and you can go down and, you know, go into the crew quarters and stuff like that. And there's still dishes in these wrecks, and there's tools in the engine room. And there was this one wreck we'd go on, the America. You'd come, it was a cruise ship, and you'd come down the grand staircase, like into the ballroom, and you could see the piano hammers from the piano that was in the ballroom. And it was just really, it was an exciting time. And I'd say maybe I burned out on it a little bit. You know, you can only dive so many times.
Sure.
So,
did you dive out here?
And then,
so
came
what's
out
the
here.
Difference?
The currents.
Yeah.
You know,
yep.
I was a very experienced cold water diver back in the Great Lakes. And I maybe underestimated the power of a strong outgoing tide or what have you. And some of the situations, not anything terrible, but kind of opened my eyes to just how powerful the currents are here and how different that is. So that was the real difference here. And the marine life is just amazing compared to what we have in the Great Lakes.
Sure.
You know, it's akin to what you'd see in a, you know, the Caribbean or something like
that. Or Jacques Cousteau. Movie.
The
currents are something that I feel like boaters discover in the Pacific Northwest, that that's a big deal.
From elsewhere.
Yeah, from elsewhere. That the currents, that's a recurring situation, people discovering the currents in the Pacific Northwest.
I think some people might think there's an exaggeration, like, oh, Deception Pass, that can't run 9 knots. Yeah. You're exaggerating. No, go ahead and try running against that.
My boat wouldn't. We'd be stuck. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that was the one thing I do over again is, you know, moving from the Great Lakes to the Pacific Northwest is, you know, read a book or take a class on understanding the tides and currents.
Yeah. True.
So now you have your center console and you're going to where the fish are.
That's right.
So you fish salmon, halibut. What is your?
Salmon, lingcod, shrimp. So in a couple of weeks, I'll trailer it out to CQ, Clown Bay, and we'll fish hatchery Chinook salmon out there for a few days. And then weather's good, we'll run out to Nia Bay and fish black rockfish out there. And it'll also be open for lingcod. And then I've also moving more to freshwater too. I like fly fishing. I've started swinging flies for steelhead. So next week I'll head out and fish one of the peninsula rivers like the Ho or something like that and swing some flies for steelhead.
Are you making any of your own flies?
Yeah, I'm tying my own flies now. And really what I wanted to do was do more of the sea-run cutthroat fishing. That's a year-round fishery we have here in Puget Sound. So these are anadromous trout that move in and out of the fresh and salt water, and they're cutthroats, and they're here all the time. And it's all catch and release. And, you know, it's just as exciting or challenging as the salmon fishing. Where are they? Why are they there? What are they feeding on? And you can do that with a center console. It's particularly good down in the South Sound. And, you know, you get in and, you know, 6 or 8 feet of water, and sometimes you can sight cast. You can see the fish. And cast to them. And so, I'm tying my own clouser minnows now and some poppers and things like that. And it's pretty fun when you get a fish on a fly you tied yourself.
And we were talking earlier about attention span and patience. I find having a hobby like that where you're, you know, tying your own flies, that's good practice to just be in that moment, you know, and take that time. That's not something people do often these days is, you know, I'm always feeling like I got to do the next thing. I got to do the next thing. So I love activities like that, that take me away from that mentality. That's great. We both need to learn more about fishing, you know?
Yeah. Well, my wife is not a big fish eater.
Yeah.
So that's kind of an impediment. But she said, you can catch it. I'll clean it and I'll cook it. And my daughter, we love salmon. So yeah, we should try it.
Good stuff.
Ten years of living aboard and cruising on this boat, and we have never.
Well, let's go. Let's go. I'll do it. Got you guys on speed dial.
We have a guide.
And when we're fishing Area 9 here,
we would love
this summer for some coho or some kings.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So it's really important to recreational boating. If you survey boaters, 60% of boaters say that they use their boat all or some of the time for fishing.
Yeah.
And so fishing could be crabbing
for
Dungeness here in the Northwest or shrimping. Or salmon, or coho, or lingcod. Mm-hmm. So it's really, really important, and that's something we work on at the association.
That's great. Well, let's talk about the association.
The association.
1947, right after World War II.
The year after his boat was built.
Yes, that's right. It was another age.
Yeah.
How did it come about? Where was the need recognized?
So the boat building business in Seattle at that time, you know, coming out of World War II, they were starting to move into recreational boat building.
Yeah.
And the businesses, Bryant's Marina, right on the cut there by University of Washington, and about 12 other businesses came together. They were concerned about a tax on recreational boats coming out of Olympia in 1947. And they said, we need to do something about this.
Wow.
So they came together, formed a coalition, and they went to Olympia, and they defeated that tax on recreational boats back in 1947.
Yeah.
And then simultaneously, the New York Boat Show in New York City was starting to get traction. I mean, a boat show? What's a boat show? Well, you get a nice facility, and you bring a bunch of boats together, and then you invite some people in, and it works.
Yeah.
So 6-8 months after that, they said, let's create the Seattle Boat Show.
Wow.
And back then, you know, nobody built boats, you know, for inventory.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it was all custom ordered.
Sure.
And the boating business is very, very seasonal. Yes, we can boat year-round here, but it's very seasonal. Most of the boating's done in the summer.
Yeah.
So the businesses, they needed a way to plan their business cycle, smooth their business cycle, smooth the seasonality. So the idea would be, let's take those orders in, you know, November, December, or January. Way back then, the show was actually in November and December. And then, you know, get those orders so we can start building the boat that's going to be delivered in June or something like that. Do that now. And so off it goes. And they actually pitched a tent right on the shores of Lake Union there. And we have a great picture, aerial picture of the show in our office. And then from there, it moved to a couple different locations, the Armory, the Seattle Center, then the Kingdome. Kingdome was a big deal. I mean, it's just such a massive building on the skyline of Seattle. And there it stood for, you know, I think the year they moved in there was 76. So the show was in the Kingdome from 76 to 1999. And it was known as the Kingdome Boat Show. The Kingdome Show.
Really?
The Kingdome Show. And I was hired by Northwest Marine Trade Association in June of 1999. And there was a lot of change in the association then. And my job was to move the Seattle. I was hired as boat show director.
Right.
My job was to move the show from the Kingdome to the new exhibition center. So when they had the vision to build the new Seahawks Stadium, Lumen Field now, they kind of forgot about the flat floor shows, the consumer shows that used the Kingdome. So the boat show, the auto show, the home show, the RV show, the sports show, the women's show. So this is prior to my arrival in the office. There was a coalition formed, another coalition, that said to the city, we're really important. We create jobs. We create tax revenue for the state. We bring to the city. We bring people to the community, to the city. And so they said, kind of as an afterthought, we'll build the exhibition center. That's the square box that's adjacent to the stadium.
Yeah.
And so I like to say I had to take a round show and put it in a square hole.
Yeah.
And I think of how much square footage we had. And so we had that last year, the Kingdome rented 192,000 square feet to the businesses. That first year, we only had 186,000 square feet. So it was kind of like musical chairs, you know, stop the music. Who doesn't have a chair, right? So it was a really tight layout that year. We didn't have enough space. Now, where we are, you know, 25 years later, We've got 230,000 square feet of space at Lumen Field and Events Center. And we actually have more space than we had at the Kingdom. But true, the Kingdom had more volumetric space than what we had. And you know, something we're missing from the Kingdom is the sailboats with the rigs up.
Yeah. Yep.
Yep. Yep. So the floor of the Kingdom, though, was the show elsewhere, like in concourses, or was it primarily just
the floor of the which would be the field, and then there was the 100 level, which is this circular area that, you know, 360 degrees. So basically, it was kind of like a NASCAR track. You know, you just go up, turn left, and just keep going around until you started seeing the same stuff again. Mm-hmm. And that was called the 100 level. And then they started adding some structures to the south of the building. First, it was a tent, and then it was called the Hawker structure. And these were structures that were, sometimes they called it the weenie or the hot dog. And it was this curved structure that would go adjacent to the Kingdom to add more space. And even with that, we still have more space in the new building than we did back then.
Wow. And it is the largest boat show on the West Coast.
That's
and
right.
Both in terms of square footage and attendance?
Yeah, attendance. I mean, really, sadly, there's really no other major boat shows on the West Coast. Up in Vancouver, they have a great show. BC Association up there does an awesome Vancouver boat show. But, you know, we've got the population here. We've got the boats. You know, the California market, it just, some of the shows down there just didn't recover from the Great Recession and COVID and things like that. And I think a feather in our cap, the NMTA, our board, our volunteer, our boat show committee, our members, that we've been able to navigate some pretty rough patches.
Yeah.
The Great Recession, some other ups and downs and changes that we're able to stay whole. And right now, of that 7-member coalition, we're the only consumer show in that building that still uses 100% of the building.
Wow.
Yeah,
and there's people would still like more.
Yeah, I know. Well, I was just going to say, I mean, so thank you to yourself and your organization and everybody that's working. You said 8 people full time. Big thank you. We had a great time this year at the boat show. It was beautiful.
Every year.
It's just an amazing event. And good on you guys for keeping it going, you know, through tough times, because we get the spoils of, you know.
We're the recreational boater that gets to go enjoy the fruits of your labor.
Yeah, well, thank you.
Your collective labor, so.
Yeah, a lot of thoughts there. You know, I sort of had a lot of Georgeisms, and one of them is, the good news is the NMTA runs the Seattle Boat Show. The bad news is we run the Seattle Boat Show. And that's because as a trade association, you know, with our mission to support our member businesses in a lot of different ways, is a lot of people think, oh yeah, you're the people that just run the boat show. And then the next question is usually, is that a full-time job? And because they think that's all we do.
Right.
And I think the legacy, you know, and I'm now at 25 years with the association, is going to be all those things that we do in the other 11 months.
Yeah.
That said, the Seattle Boat Show is hugely important to a little over half of our membership. Mm-hmm. You know, so it is the number one benefit in terms of a exhibitor count or member count is the Seattle Boat Show. And, you know, you can talk to the members and they'll tell you, I do 40% of my sales there. I do 50% of my annual sales there. Yeah. I do 70% of my annual sales there. It is not made up. Boats are sold at the Seattle Boat Show. I had a company do an economic impact study in 2020. It was really fortunate because that was kind of the last show before COVID. We actually closed the show probably 4 weeks before anybody knew what COVID was. Mm. So the sales there was $242 million of sales. We don't normally ask our members to report their sales, but we did. So they reported them to a third party. I never saw any of the numbers. Mm-hmm. And
It's unbelievable. Now the Northwest marine trade is huge, and so obviously the show is the most visible part of your work and what the association does. But tell us how you're working with the various trades up here, which is, I mean, I it's all of Washington almost. Like, you know, we're surrounded by people in the trade every day.
Yeah.
Being in the Port Townsend area.
So one of the things, another Georgism, is boating means something different to everybody.
Of course.
True. And the boat show, you know, during the show, folks will come, well, how come you don't have any sailboats for $40,000 or less? Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah, those are available, but those are, you know, going to be brokerage or by owner. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the economics of a sailboat dealer is, you know, it's not worth it for them to bring a $40,000 sailboat to the show. And we do have the other venue, Port of Seattle's Bell Harbor Marina, for the brokerage boats.
Yep.
You know, how come you don't have more drift boats, et cetera? And it's kind of like a card game. Mm-hmm. Every year we're dealt a new hand by what the businesses want to bring, what the market says folks are interested in. And I know it's not a perfect representation of all the different ways that people could go boating in the Northwest. And that's what's beautiful about here is we got freshwater, we got rivers, we got Puget Sound, we've got the Inside Passages, we've got the Pacific Ocean, we've got salmon.
It's everything.
Every, you know, you go to the Detroit Boat Show or the Houston Boat Show, it looks really different than what we have here.
I mean, we have up here everybody from paddle boarders up to cargo ships and all kinds of working boats and so forth. So I and that is one of the coolest things about doing the Boat Geeks is starting to talk to people that are in different segments of boating from my interests and learning about that. And the Pacific Northwest is just a paradise for boating. I agree. So much to do up here.
So what? So the work that we do in the other 11 months, I think of it this way. I'm kind of a data geek too. I love rows and columns. And if you take our member data, and we actually, when you apply to become a member, you know, we categorize you by what you do. And we actually use the same checkboxes that Trade Only uses. So we've been using the same categories for 25 years. And then we have sort of a subcategory with a little more fine detail on what businesses do. And we actually modeled it after the West Marine catalog. How do you categorize, you know, where do you put seats and cushions versus anchors and things like that? So if you make a pie chart of all of our members with the high level, it's kind of like taxonomy, genus and species. If you look at the genus of everybody, every category, boatyards, marinas, manufacturers, dealers, brokers, I'm kind of going around the pie chart here. Every piece of that pie chart is in like 8 to 12% increments. It's very balanced. It's, it looks like a bicycle wheel with all these spokes. And so the word ecosystem is what I think of, is that we all have to work together.
Absolutely.
And the minute one of those little pie pieces doesn't work,
it's going to have knock-on effects to the other.
You know, and you, then you got to put the alignment or fix the spoke tension or something like that. So, you know, that's a challenge for all eight of us to, you know, look after all of those segments just right. And what's happened nationally is if you go back east, there's lots of peer organizations like ours in Rhode Island or Connecticut or South Florida or North Florida. And they're great organizations. But what's happened is a lot of the marinas and the boatyards have left those regional marine trade associations to be part of a national organization. And I think what's special about here in the Northwest, somehow or another, we have managed to keep the tent full, keep the edges of the tent soft, and have everybody involved. So the good news is we're all together. The bad news is it's tough to, you know, look after everybody. So I kind of think of us like a 10-lane freeway, like maybe something you'd see down in Southern California. There's 10 lanes. We got a lane here for boatyards. We got a lane here for marinas. We got a lane here for manufacturers. And we got a lane for dealers and a lane for brokers, dot, 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 all these lanes. And NMTA, our job is to make sure traffic in all 10 of those lanes is moving at 55 miles an hour, right? 55 miles an hour. And I like analogies like this. So are we the AAA where, you know, we've got, you know, trucks on the road and we're fixing things and, you know, somebody stalled out and keep the traffic moving? Or are we like, you know, the pothole crew that's got the hot asphalt that's, you know, patching the potholes?
Probably all of the above.
Or are we, you know, we got the helicopter going over the top watching what's going on?
No, you're the Department of Transportation.
Well, I don't know if I want to be compared to them. I was like in the AAA.
That's a good one.
The clean trucks and whatnot. So we want to keep all the lanes moving. And then we also are, you know, moving from one lane to the next. And, you know, the other thing that is really important, there's a lot of other organizations that we work with. You know, we aren't doing this alone.
Sure.
So, you know, here locally, you know, we've got the Recreational Boating Association of Washington, ARBOW. You had Bob on the show mm-hmm. recently. Mm-hmm. They're a great organization. Yeah. We work really closely with them down in Olympia. Their lobbyist, Trevor, is awesome, working with our lobbyist, Roman, and our Director of Government Affairs, Jay. So they're great. Mm-hmm. And then you've got national organizations like the National Marine Manufacturers Association, the Marine Retailers Association of the Americas. You know, in Seattle, we've got the Northwest Yacht Brokers Association. So how do we work in coordination with all those different entities? And so I think about that a lot, you know, using our turn signals when we are going to change lanes and start, you know, thinking about the marinas or the super yachts, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
Have you seen through the years, like you're maintaining the lanes, but also the lanes could be changing, right, with technology moving forward over the decades? So it's not just making sure everybody's running smoothly, but also seeing, does another lane need to be built, or does this new technology fit into something that we have?
Are you going
to
have a podcast lane?
Yeah, eventually? Exactly.
Maybe that's a bicycle lane.
Yes.
So, interesting, the paddle sports.
Yeah.
They don't really have their own lane. There's no Northwest Paddling Association or anything like that. You know, there used to be the Sea Kayak Symposium up the road in Port Townsend. And when, you know, stand-up paddleboards became really popular and then the price point of kayaks started to come down, we thought there was an opportunity to sort of bring the paddling businesses in to the association and maybe become an advocate for them in Olympia and whatnot. Because it's sometimes the traditional boaters, power, sail, cruising, are a little bit at odds with the paddlers.
Of course.
And you get into things like registering, you know, geez, you know, we're using launch ramps and paddlers are using launch ramps, but we're paying into the watercraft excise tax. They're not, you know, we're registering our boats. They're not. And we're paying the gas tax. They're not. And is there a way that, you know, the Coast Guard would really like to have paddleboards or kayaks registered?
Yeah.
And so we did an event called the Northwest Paddling Festival for about 5 years out at Lake Sammamish State Park. Fantastic
was
event.
Huge.
It was huge.
Yeah, it was big.
It's an example of an event that got too good.
Yeah.
We actually were getting too many people there.
Wow.
And the dealers, the reps, the manufacturers, it kind of became free boat rides for the family, which that fits in with our mission. You know, we wanted people to try boating and get excited about it. So, you know, that
first
would be an example
free.
of a lane that we got into.
Yeah.
Another lane is back in 08. The super yacht businesses. I mean, there's more super yachts built here in Washington State than anywhere else in the country. Yeah. You know, Westport, Delta, that sort of thing. And what happens, though, is the super yachts get built here and then they leave the state because our tax policy is really rough on the super yachts. So we, there was a new organization formed in about 2009 called the Pacific Northwest Yachting Association. And then in maybe 2010, they came to us and said, can you help us, you know, get some things done? It's tough with an all-volunteer organization. In an all-volunteer organization, the life expectancy of a volunteer is about 3 to 5 years, and then they burn out.
Sure. Yeah.
Whereas a paid staff, the eight of us, we get paid to do this.
Yeah.
And
you might stay on for 25 years.
Well said. So we updated our bylaws, you know, back then, Super Yacht Committee, and then now they're doing business as the Super Yacht Northwest. And their goal is to bring the large vessels into Washington State, you know, get it on the, you know, the tour of these large vessels for charter or for their private use. And we just see them as floating economic stimulus capsules.
Absolutely.
You know, they're just like mini cruise ships. And, you know, you can think what you want about the person who owns it.
Sure.
But, you know, think about the jobs and the people that do the work on those boats. And these boats, just like a home, they always need maintenance.
Yep.
And that maintenance can be done in Canada, or it can be done in Washington, or it can be done in San Diego.
Right.
Why not have it done here in Washington State?
Absolutely. Well, and we've seen some amazing vessels. Yes.
There was an issue a few years ago. Of course, pandemic memory is such that I don't recall exactly, but maybe 5-6 years ago, where there was a push in the legislature to change something that would allow these larger yachts. And was the NMTA involved?
Yeah, we were
in
very
that?
Involved in that. So coming out of the Great Recession, you know, Florida is a, not only is it on the other side of the country, it's also on the other side of the country politically compared to Washington State.
Yeah.
Totally
exact opposite
environment in so many ways.
Yeah.
And so Florida, they celebrate boating.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's boats everywhere, large or small, it doesn't matter. They celebrate boating. It's also an international destination.
Of course.
You know, so close to Europe and whatnot.
Yeah.
But they created a sales tax cap down there so that if you bought a boat, and I forget the exact numbers, but at some point, the amount of sales tax you would pay on that boat caps, and it would be an incentive to buy a boat in Florida, a large boat in Florida.
Yeah.
And so that caught fire around the country, and a couple of other states up in the Northeast started doing that. And here in Washington, well, why can't we do that?
Mm-hmm.
And the easy answer is, well, this is Washington. And we've got a Department of Revenue that is really short-sighted.
Mm-hmm.
So we went to work. So we maintained that, we said to the brokers and the large yacht builders, that'll be our number one long-term priority. Our number one short-term priority will be to fix the cruising permit. So right now, a large entity-owned vessel, you know, if that's in the Caymans or something like that, they can come into Washington State for 60 days.
Hmm.
But on the 61st day, you're required to pay an excise tax of 10%. And so the word on the street is, whatever you do, don't go to Washington. You know, you come in, and something goes haywire, something happens, and suddenly, you know, you know, the boat's there on the 61st day, and you've got this huge tax bill.
Yeah.
And it's just as easy to go to, you know, Vancouver or Sydney, so, or Victoria.
Mm-hmm.
So about 10 years later, 10 years of work, we were able to get the Department of Revenue to update that HB 1106, where you can basically take your cruising permit from 2 years out and your cruising permit from 3 years out and kind of bolt them together to get 180 days.
Wow.
And then
difference.
And then that boat can come in. And then there's some things that you can work around if you're actually doing the work. But, you know, frankly, you need an attorney to explain to the owner or the skipper how this could work. And it's just really daunting. So,
and when did that happen, where it was changed?
I would say 3 years ago.
And have you seen a change? Like
We saw, so the, you know, with the internet, you know, Vessel Watch and stuff like that, everybody knows where these vessels are. And when they come in the Strait of Juan de Fuca, do they turn right and go south, or do they turn left and go north? So they're tracking them. And we've seen a small increase in these vessels.
Great. Good job.
Yeah.
We've seen a few of the amazing vessels come in, even in and out of Ludlow here.
Yeah. One of the things that I think I'm really proud of, and I think about our best work, boatyards. You know, the amount of regulation on our industry, particularly boatyards, is really something else. So we have the toughest boatyard permit in the country. So the it's administered under the Clean Water Act, which is federal, right? And the Clean Water Act, Clean Air Act, great thing that was created. And then what the federal government does is they delegate it to some states. So, you know, for Washington State, they kick it to our Department of Ecology to administer. And so back in about 1995, created the first ever boatyard permit for Washington State. And then basically back then it was, you need to keep the place clean, you need to sweep up after yourself. It was pretty light permit. But every 5 years, the permit needs to be reissued, and then it can't get more lenient. It has to stay the same or get tougher.
Wow.
Well, here in Washington State, we have some really strong activist groups that are really leaning on the Department of Ecology to make that permit as tough as they can. So back in the late 90s, early 2000s, the boatyards were required to put in a closed-loop system for their pressure wash water. I don't know if you've noticed that, but when you haul out your boat, and, you know, it's once a year or every 2 years or whatever, and you want to hit it with the pressure washer to get ready for your bottom paint.
One place to do it, typically, right?
Yep.
And that, you only one spot in the yard, because all that water that falls off, it goes into a catch basin, and it's a closed loop. It's filtered and cleaned. And then, you know, the bottom paint that you have on there has a biocide in it, usually copper. That all goes into the catch basin, and it's, you're just recircling the water, and that stuff cannot go into the receiving waters. So our boatyards had to do that in the early 2000s, and not a small expense to put that in.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in, you know, 2010, 2012, thereabouts, the boatyards on the East Coast were just being asked to do that. Mm-hmm. So then in the next iteration of the boatyard permit, it was required that the boatyards take a stormwater sample and send that to the state.
Oh, boy.
Kind of like a drug test. So you, yeah. you take your
pee in the cup,
your sanitary deal, and when it rains enough, not too much, not too little, in five particular months of the year, you have to go to your outfall and send a sample to a lab, and then the lab sends it to the Department of Ecology, and this is public record. Mm-hmm. And then you can see how much lead is in there, how much zinc, how much copper, how much suspended spoil, oil, turbidity. And then the provision of a Clean Water Act allows for citizen enforcement. So if you're an activist group, you could go to the website and see Darren and Darren's boatyard. Mm-hmm. Oh, geez, you guys have 112 parts per billion of copper coming off your boatyard. And then the next iteration was, okay, we're going to take those water samples and we're going to put in benchmarks or limits on how much you can discharge. And you guys think you're doing a good job at 112 parts per billion. Well, now we say it can't exceed 50 parts per billion. How are you going to get there? So
spend money on the systems that...
Treatment systems.
Yeah, yeah.
So this is a lane that's been really clear because there's nobody else in this lane other than the NMTA advocating, working for the boatyards. So on one hand, it's kind of nice. It's just us. Mm-hmm. And the good news is, you know, we've got a good relationship with the Department of Ecology and they've been receptive and we've been able to, I guess you could say, put a firm hand in the back of our members that you're going to have to do better. Mm-hmm. And they have been doing better. And so it's all public data. And so, you know, we hire an engineering firm to take that data, graph it, and it's just impressive as heck to see where our boatyards were in the late 90s to where they are today.
Wow.
We're meeting clean water standards right now. And so I'm really proud of that, and easy for me to say, it's the boatyards that are having to do all the work and the expense.
Sure.
That said, when I started as president in 2009, there was 124 boatyards in Washington State with permits, and now we're under 50.
Since when?
Since 2009.
Wow.
So we've lost...
15 years.
Yep. And so that's not good for boating, you know, access to the boatyards, the cost, that sort of thing. And, you know, we saw that during COVID. We had a nice increase in boating, but there was definitely a backlog in the boatyard. So so recently, there's a new permit that came out last fall, and the benchmark on copper was 50 parts per billion, and Ecology was recommending a permit going to 14 parts per billion, which is completely unachievable.
Yeah.
A best yard right now, maybe they can average... 25, 35 parts per billion if they're really working. So we were able to discuss, negotiate, you know, get Ecology to do a kind of a flighted level of benchmarks based on the type of receiving your water. Are you on salt water? Are you on brackish water? Mm-hmm. Are you on fresh water? Are you Eastern Washington, Western Washington, that sort of thing? Mm. So it's a good example how, you know, we get in, roll up our sleeves, and removed a lot of potholes from that lane.
Yeah.
Certainly. Yeah. Now, is the rest of the country catching up? Have they caught up in terms of boatyards?
Well, I would say we still have the toughest permit in the country.
Yeah.
And again, it comes back to two things, the environmental activists we have here in Washington, and boaters are environmental activists too.
Of course.
You know, we all want clean water.
Yeah. Yep.
Absolutely. There's no, so I always think of it as kind of a rate of change problem. You know, how quickly can we make this change? You know, we're going to do this, you know, next week, or are we going to do it next year? Mm-hmm. And I'm proud that NMTA is not that, you know, we're not big tobacco saying here that, you know, don't look at us or, you know, smoking's good for you or anything like that. We know we're an industrial user of the outdoors and we want to do everything we can. You got to do what you can when you can.
Yeah.
So we're doing that. So I'm proud of our boatyard work.
Yeah, I mean that's great. It's facilitating. It's kind of like a mediation almost, and the progress is excellent. It's good for the boaters. But yeah, I imagine it's an incredible balance. You're trying to, obviously there's so many people employed by the marine trade and dependent on these boatyards being open. We're spoiled with Boat Haven here.
Yeah, we are.
I love the boatyard, and I love the people that work the yard. And so we're lucky to have that. I had no idea that many had shut down.
One of the things that's changed is, you know, back when I had my Crown 34, I would do the bottom paint myself.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'd
yeah.
sand it myself. Yep. Mm-hmm. And boy, the taste of that copper bottom paint in your mouth. I understand why you need a respirator.
It. Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, you know, that's not okay anymore.
Yeah.
And because, you know, kind of a rental car, who's ever washed a rental car, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if you go into a yard and it's the Darren and Darren boatyard and George comes in, you know, I'm not going to care if I put a little copper on your asphalt.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the do-it-yourself opportunities in boatyards, has gone away.
Yeah.
Which, and so there you get back into the expense of boating, which is mm-hmm. something that's concerning to us as an organization. But it's sort of, do you want boatyards or not? And, you know, these boatyards that were getting sued and whatnot, I have to say, if we got to say no, do it yourself. So it's not like yeah. they're trying to make too much money or something like
right.
that. It's just from a cleanliness standpoint, mm-hmm. the do-it-yourselfers aren't as clean as they.
I have a Darrenism, which I've said for 20 years, which is you don't know what you don't know. And I feel that it happens in every trade, every industry I've worked in, is that there's just so much under the surface going on. And like you said, knock-on effects. Everything, you know, affects something else around it. But so, I mean, what an amazing association that you have. And the work that you're doing is phenomenal. The mission, you mentioned the mission, I think, the purpose of the Northwest Maritime, the Northwest Marine Trade Association is to promote the growth of recreational boating and the businesses of our members. I mean, that is supporting a lot of Washington, whether you're a boater or you work within the industry.
Yeah.
That is such a huge portion of our state, you know, so.
It's a big responsibility,
yeah.
as you know.
Yeah, and our mission statement says we work for the businesses, the
right.
marine businesses, but we definitely have a nexus to the boaters
of
a variety of ways. It was came out of our office, not when I was president, but my predecessor, Michael Campbell.
I remember.
It was his idea for the boater education card. And so, you know, we had mandatory boater education in British Columbia. We had mandatory boater education in Oregon. It was coming from the east. And it was just a matter of time.
Yeah.
And so Michael put together a coalition called WAMBE, the Washington Alliance for Mandatory Boater Education. And it was, you know, it was the Coast Guard. It was WDFW. It was Parks. It was the Paddlers. It was the Recreational Boating Association of Washington. It was, as he used to say, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker for boating.
Yeah.
And so for, I want to say close to 2 years, that group wrestled with what would mandatory boater education look like in Washington State. And a lot of the boat dealers were very, very, very concerned because they didn't want
another impediment. Yeah,
right.
exactly. Yeah.
On selling a boat.
Yeah.
yeah.
And I think when you talked with Bob Weiss the other day, this came up, and it didn't want to be something that you had to recertify every year. And
right.
It's more like a high school diploma. You
yeah.
get it, and you got it forever.
Yeah.
And then how do you phase in kind of the legacy boaters and things like that? So anyway, it was kind of all for nothing. It was rolled out nicely by Washington State Parks, and mm-hmm. no big deal.
I was proud to get mine. That was kind of one of the yeah. first early steps in my pursuing boating up here. And so I was happy to do it.
So
that's an example where we have a relationship with the boaters, and we certainly have that relationship with the at the boat show to the boaters.
Sure.
We also do health insurance for our members. There was a kind of a health insurance crisis in mm-hmm. Washington State in the 90s.
Mm-hmm.
The insurance carriers back then did not want to offer insurance to small businesses. So if you're a small business with 2, 3, 5, 10, 12, 20 employees,
mm-hmm.
basically there was
no option.
Not an exaggeration, but there was like no options, very few
yeah.
options. So Washington State Insurance Commissioner did something and said, if you're an association,
mm-hmm.
you can offer health insurance to your members. You just have to make sure that it's a bona fide association that exists to do something for those members,
mm-hmm.
you know, before it, you can't create an association just to deliver health insurance.
Yeah, yeah.
So if you're the home builders, if you're the Farm Bureau, if you're the tech workers, if you're the marine trades, then you can have one of these silos. So we've been offering health insurance under a health trust for now 20 years. And that's something I think is you talk to members, these small businesses that they're really proud of,
yeah,
is I am offering amazing health insurance to my employees.
That's great. Huge accomplishment.
Yeah. So we do that with Premira, Kaiser Permanente, and Delta Dental. So really high quality insurance. And, you know, all the business owners I know, that's something they're really proud of. And then it's also kind of fun to, we do get sort of a peek into the census data and see, like, are the employees getting older? Are the employees getting younger? Yeah. Back to where we started, the employees are getting older.
Yeah.
Yeah, you were, before we started recording, you were talking about the average age of the boat show attendees. Can you give us a little background on where that was and where it's going now?
Yeah, so when I started at the association, we've always done some form of exit survey at the shows. And in 2000, we did an exit survey, and our average age in 2000 was 41.
Okay.
And so what do you know? Every year we would do an exit survey of folks at the show, and basically our average age was going up about 0.8 a year.
Yeah.
1.6 every 2 years. And it's like, you know, because we're always like, where are the new boaters going to come from? How are we going to backfill these? Mm-hmm. And it just kept getting older and older and older. And coming out of the Great Recession, there was a special industry meeting, one of the greatest meetings I've ever been to. It was maybe 2010. It was a fly-in meeting, a cold winter day in Chicago, just adjacent to the O'Hare Airport. And basically, every big name in recreational boating was there. There was about 100 people. And it was facilitated by the National Marine Manufacturers Association. It was kind of a, we're in trouble, folks.
That's we just came out of an emergency summit.
We're in trouble.
Yeah.
What are we going to do? Mm-hmm. And there was a lot of discord about what the path forward was and sort of thing. And so outcome of those 2 days was, it was really the first time the industry became aware of demographics, me too, that in 2040, basically, the baby boomers that have been the bread and butter for recreational boating are going to be gone.
Right.
How are we going to start backfilling them? And the, you know, the white European male audience that has been the backbone of boating is not going to be there in 2040. We need to have a more diverse workforce. We need to open our eyes to the different ways people go boating. And then we addressed affordability and also, you know, the cost. You know, so on affordability was, can we create a certified pre-owned program or something like that so people can comfortably, confidently buy a used boat?
Yeah.
So so then the good news is COVID, you know, it created a surge in all things. I mean, it's that's the silver lining of COVID. I don't want to talk lightly about COVID.
Right,
of course.
Right.
But the silver lining of COVID is people rediscovered the outdoors, whether it was golf, whether it was snow skiing, whether it was camping, whether it was boating, whether it was fishing. And so there was a lot of new interest in boating. And so trying to keep those people in and make them successful at boating is part of our mission at the Boat Show. But what happened in 2023, coming out of the Seattle Boat Show, our exit survey and the Google Analytics, you can see from Google Analytics the age of your audience coming to your website. And it was really remarkable that our exit data and the Google Analytics really matched up nicely. So anyway, 2023 Seattle Boat Show, 51% of our audience was 54 years or younger. So that was celebration.
That's great news.
More than half of our audience was 54 or younger. And so we totally flipped our demo in 2023.
That is excellent.
Yeah.
And do you think, I know that the Discover Boating program, one of their main focuses was getting younger people more involved, and you guys are involved in that as well.
We are. So, you know, again, you know, what is going to, you know, activate somebody to get into boating? You know, so is it, you know, we, I think for a long time thought that paddleboards and kayaks was going to be that first step into
entry
boating.
Level, yeah.
And I'm not sure that that is really played out that way. I come back to fishing. Fishing is a great way to get young people, young families in. It's a it can be accessible, affordable, that sort of thing. Crabbing, and then, you know, probably the best thing that's happened is the boating clubs.
Yeah,
the sharing, mm-hmm. the sharing economy. And mm-hmm. that's the way a 30-something thinks about it. Yes, I want to do all these great things, but I don't want to own and maintain a boat.
Yeah.
And, you know, some people love, you know, their definition of happiness is just maintaining a boat, you know. And I like to say, you know, the beauty of boats is you don't enjoy them when they're turned on. You can enjoy them like we are right now, yeah. just in the marina.
Absolutely.
But the shares are a great way to get people in. And so that was an outcome of that fly-in meeting in Chicago, was we need to get behind the sharing economy, the sharing boats, mm-hmm. boat shares. A lot of the dealers and manufacturers were skeptical of that because maybe they're not going to sell as many boats.
Sure. If five different families are sharing one boat, right. yeah, instead of getting five boats.
I knew the three founders of Sail Time way back when fractional sailing mm-hmm. first came out, and they approached one of the sailboat manufacturers in this country and said, here's our plan. We're going to put bases around the country. We're going to have people buy in fractional ownership of these boats. And the first company they went to said, yeah, I don't think that's going to work. The second company was Hunter.
Yeah.
And Hunter sold, I don't have the number correct maybe, but they sold like 140 sailboats in 1 year just to this new company.
Yeah.
And that made Hunter go through the roof. So. Right. The boat clubs, the fractional ownership, yeah, that's had a pretty big impact.
Yeah, so if you think about how do you grow boating, I mean, that's our mission. How do you get, I like to say, I want people to wake up in the morning and say, I want to go boating.
Oh, well, Darren and I do that every day.
Right. Yeah. We're boat geeks, yeah. Of course, that's what we think about.
We need more boat geeks, though.
We do. Or we want people to wake up in the morning and say, I want to buy a boat.
Yeah.
How do you do that?
Yeah.
And I'm not sure what the combination of words to do that is, but we try. So one of the things that I say, and I totally believe this is going to be a bold statement, but if you encounter, read, see a positive news story about recreational boating here in the Northwest, it started in our office. Mm. The media, sorry, folks, they do not.
They don't like to cover that.
They don't wake up in the morning. Let's do a nice story about boating, how much fun it is.
Yeah. Right.
But if there's a fatality or some bad news,
of course that's going to be.
That gets covered.
Yeah.
So we have a woman that does our PR work, Samuelson Communications, and the amount of earned media we get, TV, radio, print, is really, really impressive. And I think if there was no trade association and you got a bunch of boat businesses in the same room and asked them what they would want, they're going to say, we want press. We want exposure.
Positive PR.
Positive PR.
Yeah.
So really pleased with that. We have a great relationship with King 5 Evening Magazines. They've done some amazing segments for us. And then we're also locally, we're blessed with some really good media ourselves. I mean, what you guys do. And then you got Northwest Yachting Magazine, 48 North. Mm-hmm. We've got our own media, which I think is above average for our market.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many, we talk about this association, it's member-based. How many businesses are members of the NMTA?
So right now we've got 580 members, and there's always a renewal cycle. In an association, you always lose 10%.
Right.
You know, people merge, people retire, they go out of business. There's always a little bit of churn of about, for us, it's 10%. Mm. Interesting, the Washington Restaurant Association says they have a churn of about 50% in the restaurant business. Yeah. So we lose 10 and we have to build it back up. So by the end of our fiscal year, June, we'll be back up to plus 600.
Wow.
So we say we've got 600 members.
And when you compare the NMTA to similar associations around the country, is this one of the, I mean, it's one of the oldest.
For regional, we are the largest.
The largest, yeah.
We are the largest. I mean, a full-time staff of 600 members. Our closest peer would be the Michigan Boating Industry Association.
Wow.
They do a great job with the Detroit Boat Show, their crew. Mm-hmm. I think they've got a staff of 5. They do a good job in Michigan. Southern California had a great trade association for decades, SCMA.
Yeah.
They ran the Los Angeles Boat Show, but they did not make it through the Great Recession. Mm-hmm. Mm-mm. Yeah. And then that was a really confused market down there, a lot of different shows. And and it's the shows. The one thing all of our trade associations have in common is it's the boat show that funds all the work.
Mm. Right.
So it kind of gets back to that good news, bad news about we own the Seattle Boat Show.
Right.
So, you know, yes, people think we might be that office that just produces the Seattle Boat Show. But if it wasn't for the Seattle Boat Show, we couldn't have a staff of eight, two lobbyists, and do all the things that we do.
Yeah.
Wow. Lots of good work.
Absolutely. So now, what kind of businesses should be looking at the NMTA that are in the marine industry? Like, any business that has anything?
Yeah. So the way I think of it is, you know, I call it the three P's. We promote boating. Mm-hmm. So first of all, maybe businesses just have a notion that, you know, like I said, if there was no trade association, they would want promotion.
Right.
So we promote boating, and then we do that with events like the Seattle Boat Show or our Grow Boating program with the Earned Media and all the nonprofits that we support with our grant program, things like that. So that's the promotion side of it. And then there's the protect side of it. You know, back to those 10 lanes on the highway, you know, taking care of those potholes or the broken down cars, making sure that everything's moving at 55 miles an hour. But, you know, there's, you know, so much regulation on these businesses.
Yeah.
And it's not decreasing. It's right. increasing. So there's the protect side of it. And then there's the event side to produce things like the Seattle Boat Show. And so another way to look at it is we help businesses make money with like our shows. We help save them money with our health insurance or we solve problems.
Right. And help them navigate.
So you can think of like a Venn diagram of all of our membership where they overlap. You got a pretty big circle for the boat show. You got a pretty big circle for the health insurance. And then you've got a pretty good circle of people that, as I say, kind of have an axe to grind with government. They've been, you know, misunderstood or maybe they think overregulated by one of the state agencies or something like that. So that's a really strong group. Mm-hmm. And then there's a small group, I estimated about 100 businesses. They just want to do the right thing and support their association.
Yeah.
So I think the AAA analogy is pretty good. You know, I'm a AAA member and I don't think I've used it for years, but I have it.
Yeah.
It makes me feel good.
Yeah.
And so that's our job. So if you were a marina on Hood Canal or something like that, and you were a member, you know, you would expect us to alert you of some legislation or something. And I think that's a reasonable expectation.
Sure.
So if it's, you know, the Darren and Darren Marina on Hood Canal or whatever, you know, we would alert you if there was a problem. So, you know, last year, there was a sneaky bill that came through that was going to make it illegal to have foam flotation inside of the encapsulated plastic cell that makes docks float.
Oh, wow.
Oh, boy.
So good idea to not have styrofoam issues of sound. Bad idea to build docks with something without something other than air to provide flotation.
Mm-hmm.
So our lobbyist and on his staff reads hundreds and hundreds of bills every session. Mm-hmm. And so Max was going through it. Oh my gosh, what's this? No styrofoam in the flotation for docks. Mm-hmm. So we contacted the entity that was running the bill and were able to negotiate a compromise here, but that would have been terrible.
Sure.
So what we do is we contact all of the marinas and let them know that we need help. We need them to write a letter. We need them to testify.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it could be that the senator or the rep that is in their district was maybe the sponsor or co-signer of the bill or something like that. So I think that's kind of the calculus or the transaction there is you join the association. We inform you when of something that might be of interest to your business. Same way we're a member of the Association of Washington Business.
Right.
I expect them, if there's something that's kind of out of my line of sight, that they're going to let me know about it.
Right.
And that's
early warning system.
Mm-hmm. So, but I think the membership has become more transactional.
Mm-hmm.
So George, membership is $560 in the trade association. How am I going to get $561 back?
They want that ROI.
Yeah. How am I going to get the ROI?
Yep.
And I think, you know, our culture has changed, you know, coming out of World War II, communities, social community clubs, organizations. It was more of, people were more joiners back then.
Right.
So when I meet with somebody for the first time, I'll say something like that. Are you a member of your Chamber of Commerce?
Mm-hmm.
Are you a member of, are you a Rotarian? Something like that. And if they say something like, oh, geez, you know, the Chamber of Commerce, they never get anything done.
You know?
I'm like, oh, okay, this might be a tough sell.
Yeah.
So, so I think people that want to sort of have that peace of mind and do the right thing and support all eight of us, plus our 13-member board and what we're doing to look out for the industry.
Yeah. Very worthy.
I think the Boat Geeks might be an NMTA member here in the
near
future.
You know, a lot of it is, for me, is just education and knowing what you guys are doing. It was the same with ARBA. You know, I became a member of ARBA in the morning. I was doing the research on what ARBA does, you know, and it's the same with NMTA. I think just knowing you guys are out there, it's, like you said, peace of mind. It's insurance to a certain extent. It's knowing that you guys are doing the right thing for the people that we interact with on a daily basis. Yeah. And the
people that we sometimes absolutely depend on.
Absolutely.
We want to make sure they're there
and
they are thriving.
Yeah.
Somebody's got to look out for them.
Yeah. I think, you know, I used to tongue in cheek say to our members, you know, we would never want the governor to wake up one morning and make boating illegal. I mean, I used to really say that, like, as an example of just an extreme example.
Right.
Wouldn't want boating to become illegal. Well, that's exactly what happened during COVID.
Yep.
And, it was, would have been, I should have looked up the date, but let's just say it was late March of 2020 when the stay home, stay healthy order came in, right? Mm-hmm. And remember all the discussion about essential businesses, what's essential, right?
Yeah.
And this is interesting how fast government was moving during that time. Yeah. I mean, they would sort of have an idea on Monday, and by, you know, Wednesday it was getting formal, and by Friday morning the governor was saying,
implemented.
Here's what we're doing.
Yeah.
It was remarkable. So anyway, it was a Friday afternoon, late March. I got a call from our director of government affairs at about 3 o'clock and says, hey, I just got a call from governor's office and commerce department. They're creating the list of essential businesses, and you're not going to believe this. They only want to make commercial boating
essential.
So tugboats,
right?
Police boats, that kind of thing. And I explained to him that, you know, recreational boating has some elements that are definitely essential. And they said, okay, just tell us what you want and we'll make it so. Mm-hmm. So Peter and I thought to ourselves, well, can we call a board meeting? No, don't have time because we need this by 5 o'clock.
Wow.
Should I call the executive committee? No. Okay, sounds like it's a Peter and George decision. And we knew what was going on in California from earlier in the week. We knew what was going on in Michigan. So we recommended to Governor's Office and Commerce, boatyards, marinas, service providers, fuel docks, designated essential. So I said, do we need to, like, put this on letterhead, send it to somebody? He says, no, I'll text it to them right now.
Wow.
So, and sure enough, Monday morning, Governor Inslee steps to the podium, click on this link, go to that document. There's all the essential businesses. And boatyards, marinas, fuel docks, and service providers were designated as essential. And if NMTA hadn't taken that phone call, those would have been closed down.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's dodging a bullet. Like that, again, you don't know what you don't know. And such a worthy association to support if you're into boating. In the
thank you. And then just sort of the follow-on is that, then do you remember it was all about the reopening?
Yeah.
The reopening. So are you going to be in phase one, phase two, phase three, phase four? And we knew, you know, Seattle Boat Show, phase four, maybe even phase five for a big event like that.
Yeah.
But we knew the auto lobby was clearly going to get the auto dealers into phase one.
Mm-hmm.
And we knew we were on the bubble for phase one. So what happened is it was a Friday. This time the governor went to the microphone on a Friday, and we were not in phase one for our dealers and our brokers to come in. Meanwhile, boats had started selling. And even though you weren't supposed to sell them, dealers were and brokers were finding a way to sell them. But we needed to make it legal. And anyway, so we went to work that weekend. And I double-checked some sales data with University of Washington Sea Grant. Lisa, who does our PR, got us an interview on Cairo. So the classic, you know, COVID, you know, in my basement office with the bookshelf behind me on Cairo. They ran that thing Friday night, all day Saturday, all day Sunday about the seasonality of boating. And then we got some extra data from UW. And we got a call Monday morning from Commerce. And we were into phase one. And to just keep it confidential, later that day, Governor Inslee gave the list of all the essential businesses, and we or it's not essential, phase one, and we were in phase one. So suddenly, you know, our brokers and dealers did not have to wait another 60 days to start selling boats again. And again, if it wasn't for us and our don't give up, don't quit attitude on that Friday night and that weekend, that would have been just devastating for our members.
Mm-hmm. Amazing. Good job.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you to everybody on your staff and, on behalf of the boaters up here. I mean, that's 60 days not being able to make sales. You're talking about all kinds of livelihood and again, just don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Amazing. So now if people are wanting to learn about the NMTA or get involved, become a member, how do they do that?
So Northwest Marine Trade Association, and our website address is nmta.net. So November, you can tell I wasn't in the military.
We're Echo.
Gonna put it, it's going to be right here on the screen.
Yeah, we'll put it up there.
nmta.net.
Yep.
And so we kind of have a try before you buy. If you ever wanted to sit in on one of our committee meetings, we have 10 standing committees. Mm-hmm. So if you wanted to sit in on a government affairs committee or a boatyard committee, something like that, you could take a peek behind the curtain, see what that's like. Sadly, you know, we're mostly Zoom for meetings these days. Mm-hmm. We just did a little cleanup to our office, so we're going to go back to some hybrid meetings in April.
Yeah.
But that said, Zoom is pretty doggone convenient for meetings like that. And I think the most interest for people is in the Government Affairs Committee. Sure. I mean, that's where you can really get a pulse for what's going on. Jay, our VP and Director of Government Affairs, does a great job. He tends to bring in a guest every month, you know, might be one of the electeds or somebody from one of the agencies, that sort of thing. And then I do think if you look at our board, our Boat Show Committee, these are some of the most successful businesses in Puget Sound.
Yeah.
And why is that? I think if you're a business owner and you can somehow find the time to be a volunteer, whatever the organization is, it might be the Boys and Girls Club or the NMTA, that you've got the discipline to run your business in such a way that you can leave it for a period of time. But then to be shoulder to shoulder with peers and some of the best and the brightest in the industry, I've seen it in 25 years. It rubs off on people.
Sure.
You know, oh my God, Darren, that's a great idea. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do that. Can I learn more about that? Mm-hmm. And, you know, that's what I think we do. We connect the dots for a lot of people and a lot of businesses.
Absolutely.
You know, I've been part of so many associations over the years.
Sure.
Film, video, advertising, Sail America, whatever it might be. And it always seems like at a certain point, an association, eventually the focus becomes how do we stay relevant? How does this association, how do we keep ourselves together? But you guys, and I was a member 12 years ago, 10 years ago. You guys don't have that issue at all. It's like you guys are so busy and focused on your work that the viability of the association takes care of itself. It's not, you're not out there constantly trying to justify your own existence like so many associations do.
At least that we see, I bet he's...
I mean, financial viability is one of our six strategic goals, and we talk about it a lot. You know, if the Seattle Boat Show, for whatever reason, wasn't as financially healthy as it is today, we'd be a different organization.
Yeah.
And somehow we've managed to do that. Our forefathers, four people, really did good things for us, and we've been able to be good stewards of the show. And some people think I could boast or brag more about what we do to somehow get another 100 members or something like that. So if we're a nonprofit, we're a 501c6. Mm-hmm. So basically, you know, every dollar that comes in, that dollar goes out.
Yeah.
So if we had, let's just say we had another 100 members, and membership is $560, that's $56,000, you know, that money would be spent on, frankly, additional staff. You know, somebody to help Jay and Olympia, or somebody to do a lot of the analysis that we need to do on all the different boating data, all the data that we come across, and then be able to push that data back out to the members. I do a lot of that work myself right now, and it's super time consuming. Or we might hire somebody on a fee for service basis to do it. That's how that's kind of be the next step.
Sure.
There's strength in numbers when you go to an elected, the governor or whatever.
Oh boy, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Absolutely. Now, we're very much looking forward to, we had a great time at the Seattle Boat Show this year. We're looking forward to next year. What do you have coming up? I think, are you involved in the Anacortes?
Yeah, so we've got the Anacortes Boat and Yacht Show up at Cap Sandy Marina, Port of Anacortes. So got that. Tickets are on sale now. The dates are May 16 and 18. I call that our laboratory. We can try different ideas up there. So it's a Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Very short show, just 3 days. And then this will be our third year partnering with the good folks at Trawlerfest and Active Interest Media. So at the Seattle Boat Show, we always sell tickets into 45, 50 states at the show. And Trawlerfest draws people from 32 states last year.
That's amazing.
So we had 240 boats on display last year. It's really a function of, you know, inventory, what's there. They tend to be a little larger boats. And the folks, you know, from Wichita or El Paso or whatever, they see that there's a, you know, American tug there, and then they fly in and take a look at it.
That's
a great show. I call that the Yes Show. You know, can I park there for free? Yes. Can I move in early? Yes. Can I move out late? Yes. Yeah.
It's great
really
show.
Fun.
It really is to be able to just go on all these boats. And I mean, when we go, we're not going to buy another boat, but we like to get ideas.
Of course.
So it's a really good show for that too.
Absolutely. Excellent. Well, support your local marine trades for sure. Buy local. Have local service people work on your boats. And support the NMTA. You can find them at nmta.net. Find out all the information. And, you know, if you're a trade in the business, think about joining. It's worth it. Yeah. You've heard already what they do for us. So thank you, George, for being with us today. We really appreciate it. Hope you enjoyed your time out at Ludlow here.
It's been a pleasure and a lot of fun. I really appreciate you getting me out of the city today. Thank you so much.
Glad to help.
We were rocking and rolling today. There must have been boats going by today or something.
I liked it.
Yep, absolutely. All right. Well, thank you very much, George. It was a pleasure, and we'll see you again sometime.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
I'm daydreaming of a day. I'm not wasting my time. Don't wait till I come alive. Kitchen, wait for a sign.